This is Bringing the Darkness to the Light with Catherine Nadal, professional psychic medium.
Today's guest is Sean Murphy. Sean is an American blues and R&B singer, songwriter, known for her powerhouse singing style. It's a pleasure to have you on, Sean.
Great to be here, Catherine.
Yes, no, it is amazing. I have been introduced by my cousin, Tommy Del Rossi. He's been your drummer for, I think, 6 albums. He's also just produced your most recent album in his studio, brand new studio in the home. And also, Niecy is a good friend of yours also. So, yeah. So you're in good company there with those two. Very good. Wow. So tell me, just to start out the interview, tell me about recording this last album, because I know Tommy's new studio. Tell me more about that.
The name of the studio, first of all, is Coming Soon Sounds. And he's very proud of that. And we all signed the wall. There's a big mural and everything. And it was just, we are so thrilled for him that he's getting to do this. And he just jumped right in. And we said, you know, we've been recording over at XYZ Studios. I said, let's just go to Tom's house and record it there. And we did. And it was just, he was so professional and so on top of everything and just everything, his ideas and everything just gelled with us.
Yes. It's very exciting, especially to have your own studio. But in Nashville, you know, he and I had talked and it was like everyone in Nashville has like a home studio. So he's like very lucky about that. Finding a home with a home studio is probably very difficult in Nashville.
Yeah, he had a studio in his old house, but it just wasn't conducive to the full amount. He had done some records over there for friends, but when he found this place, it was like God said, here's your next calling. So we're hoping to keep him as a drummer, though, you know, we're so happy for him.
Oh, very good. Well, your entire career has been very impressive. I was looking at your bio and you've worked with some really big, big acts. I mean, from Little Feat to Bob Seger to Meatloaf to Eric Clapton, the Moody Blues, Herbie Hancock, Phil Collins, Glenn Frey, Joe Walsh. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's, wow, you have just really been very blessed.
I have. And the list makes me very tired. No, just kidding. I have been graced with the most wonderful experiences with working with all of these people. Of course, I have to tip my hat to Eric Clapton at first, because I did 2 or 3 tours with him, one in Canada. And then, of course, we did Live Aid, which was, it was so amazing that we all had a physical reaction from the actual sound of the crowd coming at us when he started doing Layla. And it was 101,000 people, and they all yelled at the same time he started the song, and the physicality of it. Actually, we all stepped back like a couple of steps and we kind of looked at each other. What just happened? So that was something that I don't think anything can top that. But so that's why I picked Eric first. And of course, Mr. Seger, I've worked with him, oh gosh, over 40 years since the 60s. So a little bit there, and then joined the band in 73, and then in and out, and then 78 through his retirement, I was with the band.
That's incredible, because those two, they happen to be favorites of mine. But as you're performing with them and working with them and seeing them kind of side by side with you, how does it feel being part of their circle, but also in your mind, you're still also a fan? How does that feel for you? Because those two guys are really iconic.
Yeah, I can understand that. With Bob, it was sort of, I got to know him through his manager, and his manager was managing me for a while and booking me in the local clubs and festivals in the Detroit area. And so we got a chance to open up for him in a couple of clubs and things like that. So I knew him pretty well before I actually started working with him. The first time I recorded with him was on Kathmandu. So that was what, 74? Maybe before that, 72? But yeah, I didn't join as a full-time member until 78. And then Clapton was like, I had initially worked with Seeger with this lady, Marcy Levy, who's changed her name to Marcella Detroit. And she had gone off to do other things and left the state and worked with other people. And finally, she ended up writing some songs and joining Clapton. And so she was the other singer when I finally had gone to do Behind the Sun. Eric asked her at that point, he said, well, do you know any strong female voices? And she goes, absolutely. And she called me right up. And so I went down to Montserrat and we did Behind the Sun. And after the first song, Eric said, well, how would you like to be on the road and support the record? And I went, okay. It took me about 2 seconds.
Exactly. Oh, wow. That's a dream come true. Wow.
It was. And the thing was, as I told my manager, he goes, what did you think after working with Clapton? And I said, well, and I'm getting emotional right now. When we weren't singing anything, we were backstage listening, and he'd start one of the angst kind of songs in the solo that I would just tear up. It was just the level of emotion that hit me was never ending. Every time he played like that, it was very emotional for me.
Yes. Yeah, he really has made an impact in the music list of greats, not just playing the guitar, but his songwriting. And the lyrics have really changed a lot of people's lives, you know. He's just incredible. Wow. I wanted to ask you about Phil Collins. He's another one that people are just like blown away by his career, not just Genesis, but his solo work.
Absolutely. And it's my understanding that he just now got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after all these years. I had the big fortune of being able to work with both Eric and Phil. Phil was the producer on that record, Behind the Sun, for Eric. And then, of course, we did the tour. And then when we went to Live Aid, Phil was playing with Genesis and his solo thing over in the UK. He got on the flight, flew over here, and played with us on our three song set. And it was just phenomenal. And I have to say, backtrack a little bit about being in the studio with him. I've never worked with anybody that had all of his ducks in a row at all times. And we did the whole record in 13 hours. I mean, all the backgrounds and everything, and all the ideas that came from, you know, setting up the backgrounds and everything. And it was phenomenal.
Yeah, that is interesting. Everyone has their own style, I guess, you know. That's really someone that's working in a very systematic way, you know, especially with doing takes. I'm sure you've had to do many takes. And if someone hears it right, they just keep moving on. You know, there's no needing to do multiple takes. That's really great. Another person that I always wanted to meet, which I have not met, is Alice Cooper.
Now, that's a story. That's a story. I was living in L.A. at the time. And, of course, I've worked with Alice on many festivals, not in his band, but on the roster, even back when he was bringing chickens on stage and all that kind of silliness. I was involved with a lot of the bigger background singers in LA at the time and got a call that he was calling all these singers to come down to the studio to work on the record, Hey Stupid. So I showed up, and I mean, there must have been 15, 17 great singers. And we all did the record. Gosh, I can't even remember. I know Mike Finnegan was there and a few other people, a lot of them that I knew their name, but I'd never met them before. But we were in the middle of doing about the third song. And somebody came in and go, oh, we're going to take about a 45-minute break. Oh, okay. So he said, Alice is bringing a box of rattlesnakes into the control room and he wants to show everybody. I didn't go into the control room at all. And then we just continued on and did the rest of the records.
Wow, that's a great story. I know I have seen him live. And, you know, he brings out the cobra around his neck and, you know, all sorts of things are happening when he's on stage. Yeah. So unique. You know, I think that's what has really been captured over time with Alice Cooper is not just his lyrics, but his ability to be a performer and a showman. You know, he just drags the audience along with him, you know, on this, you know, episode that he puts on stage, I guess. Yeah. Someone you did work with that I have seen on stage several times is Michael Bolton. And wow. Yeah. His voice to me, oh, that is just, it's like listening what to me would be the male version of Whitney Houston. I don't know, but Michael Bolton really to me is a male Whitney Houston.
I've known Michael since, I'm going to say, gosh, the early 80s, I think 83, his band opened for Seeger for about 4 months. And so we got a chance to become friends. And I worked on one of his early records, as well as he brought me into the fold. And I worked on an album for Jimmy Barnes, who's like the Australian Bob Seger, I would say. Got a gruff voice. Wonderful, wonderful singer as well. We've had some great times together, and he's just a wonderful singer. And I remember him giving me a cassette. I said, you write songs, so I'd like to hear him sometime. So he hands me a cassette, and it's got all of his big hits on him, you know, the demos for it. I think I still have it somewhere.
That's incredible. Wow. And, you know, I can't not mention Glenn Frey and Joe Walsh. I mean, Joe Walsh, my gosh. I mean, I've been to see the Eagles, and Joe Walsh is like something. So what do you have about those two talented musicians?
Well, of course, Glenn was born in Michigan, and he used to come to Seeger shows a lot. So I got to meet him there. Always a really, really nice guy. And as far as Joe, initially, when he was in the James Gang, he played in Detroit and Michigan a lot, and we were on the same bill a number of times. So I got to meet him then. And then, of course, when he got the job with the Eagles, and I think it was on one of their first hiatus, Glenn and Joe decided to, they weren't ready to sit back. So they went on the road themselves. And that's where I got the job and did some background work for him. And of course, Joe was, every time we'd stop at we were doing bus tours. Every time we'd stop at a gas station, oh, I gotta go to the end of the store. So he'd go into the store and he'd come out with all of these kids' toys. And they weren't for kids. They were stuff for him to access and do on stage. It was ridiculous. It's so funny. Oh, he's just a great guy.
So he was buying props for his show.
Absolutely.
Wow. So I know we mentioned a lot of performers and a lot of really talented musicians. Who is someone that you have not worked with that in the back of your mind you always thought, I hope I get a chance to work with them?
Gosh. You got me stumped right now.
I'm gonna throw one out to you.
Brian Ferry.
Oh, who?
Brian Ferry.
Brian Ferry. Oh, wow. So what would you like to do with him? What would you foresee doing with him if you had the chance?
Well, first I have to hem and haw. I am such a fan. But after I get over being flabbergasted, I would love to tour with them. He's got some amazing singers that he records with. I think most of them are over in Europe, but all of his solo stuff since he's left Roxy Music, including Avalon. I think that Roxy Music was still together at the time, but that whole era just kind of shifted and he went into this lush kind of very sexy, but not overt. It was just so classy. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful entertainer.
That's so great. Out of all the people that you've worked with, who do you think was the most instrumental in encouraging you to have your own solo career?
Oh, gosh, probably Little Feat. I worked with them 15 plus years. I'd known all those guys quite a long time since, as a matter of fact, 86, Bill Payne and Fred Tackett joined the Seeger tour at the time. Bob was contemplating maybe retiring, and he said, you know, I've had all these people, wonderful musicians, play in the studio, but I'd like to do a band, a big band, and have everybody that I'd so admire in the studio, have them come out and be on the road with me. So that's what we did. I don't know. I think there was 30 people in the band at the time. We had like 3 or 4 keyboard players, and it was just madhouse, but it was a wonderful time. But that's where I met Fred and Bill Payne. And I'd known Paul Barrer when I first moved to L.A. back in 85. He was working with this other guy from Detroit. So I'd gone out to see him. So that's how I had met him. We got together and they really started spurring my writing on. And I got into the fold of writing songs with them, the four, Fred, Paul, Bill, and Fred, Paul, Bill, and me. Yeah, the four of us.
That's so great. Wow. So when did you really feel like you could see yourself doing that? Because it is a big transition to be part of a band and then to think that you could have your own band. For some people, it's an easy transition. Other people struggle with that.
Well, I'd started out as a solo artist. So when I first started singing, I was always in my own bands. Then I had a little diversion into the theater thing, and I got married, and my husband at the time said, you know, I just saw an ad in the paper for they're holding auditions for some musical downtown. Why don't you go try out? I said, okay. So I went down there, and it was Hair. And they were doing a rendition of it in the Detroit area at the Best Pocket Theater. So I walked in and there was like this big theater and it was really dark, except you could see the lights on the stage. And I got about four steps into the area and I heard, there she is. And I went, whoa, what's going on? And it was Meatloaf, who I'd been in a lot of festivals with, the same festivals in different bands at the time. So I'd known him for a long time. And what happened was he was trying to get into the Hair out in L.A. They said, we're full, but we're going out to Detroit and do a show there. Then they said, well, if you know anybody that would fit into any of these roles, call them up and have them come down. She goes, ah, I know the one person I'd want, and I have no idea how to get in touch with her. So that's the whole story about that. And so I got up, and I think I sang maybe two sentences of a song that I was going, okay, thank you so much. That'll be all. I went, oh, that didn't last long. So as it turned out, they'd already knew that they were going to accept me. They just want me to walk through the whole thing. So I was in Hair and the run of the play in Detroit. And then I went to Broadway and did it there. And then another run of the play in Washington, D.C. So I thought, well, I'm going to be an actress now. That didn't work out either, but I was in a couple of Broadway plays, so that was a wonderful experience.
Wow, you've really had such an incredible life. Just like listening to these stories and all of these like twists and turns, to think that Meatloaf would be just there. I mean, it's just like that again is like lucky strike.
I'm very much into signs and things like that. So I had some really good entities following me around and helping me, you know, along the way. And my horoscope is going to be, everything's going to be roses now after 8-9 years of turmoil.
Wow. Well, I'm really excited to speak about this album. I want to start talking about the songs that you have. The first song I want to mention is Mama's Home. Tell me about that song.
Mama's Home came from my very good friend, Jay Edwards. He is an enigma. I first met him when he walked in to this blues jam, and he looked like an accountant, only he was probably 6'5", and just wire-rimmed glasses, real short hair, and a button-down shirt. But the voice that came out of him was like, oh my God, it was like Chris Stapleton. It was unbelievable. We've stayed in touch along the way, and he now looks more like Chris Stapleton with the beard and everything, but he writes some amazing songs. I've done other songs by him on other albums, and I called him up when I was getting ready to put this together, and I said, Jay, do you have any songs? And he goes, yeah, I got a couple I send in. So he sent me two songs, and we ended up recording them both. So Mama's Home is the first one. Gosh, the other one is... Take Your Kiss Up Off My Lips.
Wow, yes. So we're going to play Mama's Home right now.
Well, I live in Cincinnati as fast as I could. I done told the warden I was gone. Open your arms, sweet daddy. Mama's home.
So this album, if you had to describe the vibe of this album, how would you describe it? Rock, blues?
Pretty much. It's got a little bit of everything. We kind of tried to widen the genre, and we're doing some rock blues. We're doing some rock. We're doing some just blues. But we got a lot of energy this time. We're very happy with everything, the way it turned out.
So exciting. Tell me about the next song that we selected. It's called Brand New Blues.
That's kind of a funny story. I had written the song, a number of songs on the record, and we had a full 13 songs that we were going to do. And this good friend of mine, Doug Jones, called me up. He goes, "Well, are you still looking for songs?" I said, "No, not really." And he said, "Well, I have a song I think you should hear." And I went, "Oh, okay." So he sent it to me and it knocked me back. I'm telling you, it was an amazing song. He did it through AI. He and another friend of mine, Roger Mason, wrote it. We took one of my songs out that I wrote. We took it off the map and put this on and liked it so much, we ended up titling the record by it.
That is so great. Wow. So we're going to play Brand New Blues now.
To figure out yesterday what you can't change today. Say you remember me treating you wrong, the game goes along with that same old thing over and over, wasted away on the crimson and clovers. Got no more time to waste on you. Wasn't too proud to roam. You can't remember what you did yesterday, let alone those sweet, sweet words you say. Say you surrender, say you got remorse. Makes me uneasy, and it's just getting worse. It's that same old thing over and over, wasting away. Crimson and clover, I got no more time to waste on you. You need to figure out what you're gonna do. Maybe it's time for you to start.
It's interesting when you mentioned AI. Times have really changed. So when you go back to your beginning years, did you ever think how the computer would be able to help us the way we are now? Music was so different then. Even like how music is heard. Now you have your audience streaming. You used to have to go and stand online at the record store. You know, there's been so many changes since you started. What are the things that you like right now that you think are good changes in the business?
I think there's a lot of good coming out of AI, but don't put it out as your single. I think the AI music trend is great for people like me that don't play an instrument, but write lyrics and can possibly just put your lyrics and I guess they call them prompts or whatever into this thing. And a song comes out in about 30 seconds. And it's really, really amazing. And it really helps along. But I would never put out a record with what finished off AI. I would only ever use them, I would think, as demos.
What do you think about social media and expanding the play of songs? You know, music is really being heard. so quickly now because of social media.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of good in that, but I think there's a lot of danger in that there's just no gatekeeper on some things that need to be kind of more harnessed. Social media in general just sort of gotten away from people and humanity, and don't get me started about that.
I know. Well, I think of some of the stuff that I see on TikTok. You know, they're doing these dances, but they're actually doing dances to certain songs, you know. So, like, certain songs actually take off because of things like TikTok and stuff. So there's, like, you know, the angel on the shoulder and the devil on the other shoulder with a lot of this, you know. It's interesting. Before we go on to the next song, you had said something earlier, which I have lived by my entire life, is following signs in life. When you were little, how did you feel about music? Did you have a lot of family influences, or did you feel that you had been given early signs that you would spend your life and most of your career in music?
Well, you know, my mom and dad could sing, and they made this acetate record. My mom sang Hard-Hearted Hannah, and my dad sang another song. And of course, the acetate got lost in a divorce. So my mom could play piano, and she wanted to teach me piano. Well, I knew better. Oh, I don't need this. I'd never want to play the piano. And so I said, I quit the lessons. And that is my one huge heartache that I didn't end up playing piano. But I don't think I really thought I'd be in music for a long time, because I was into so much theater when I got going, and maybe starting around ninth grade, I started being in plays and musicals and things like that. So that's where I really thought that I was heading, but music won.
Yes, but I think a lot of the theater really has helped you on stage, because a lot of times performers struggle with that. They have, like, anxiety that people are looking at them. So when you've actually had that theater experience, you're already used to people looking at you, you know?
You know, a thing that's so interesting to me, I always had a terror time giving a speech in speech class. Well-lit room, just a few people. I would just get tongue-tied, but give me a high stage with 10,000 people. Oh, I'm in my element. It doesn't make any sense, but that's what it's like for me.
Wow. So do you remember any early signs?
Just that I guess I could sing. I did enjoy it. And as a matter of fact, right after I graduated high school, when I was in high school, I had a little duo with an ex-boyfriend of mine, and he played guitar, and we sang little, you know, ditties and country songs and things like that. And so I'm graduated. I'm sitting there. What am I going to do with myself? I'm being a waitress or whatever. And I get a phone call. And this lady said, "Hi, I heard that you sing." And right away, I'm thinking, oh, my ex-boyfriend, they want to hire us, right? So this is the only time in my entire life that I actually said a bunch of fibs. And I said, "Oh, yes, we have a huge catalog, and we can play anything you want." And I'm just on and on and on. She can't get a word in edgewise, and I'm trying to sell myself. "No, no, no, no." She goes, "My daughters have a band, and we wanted to know if you wanted to come down and audition." Oh, boy. Luckily, I knew a couple of current R&B songs, you know, Knock on Wood and things like that. And I went over and I auditioned and didn't know what to do with my hands or anything. I picked up a tambourine. I'm hitting my leg with the tambourine and trying to sing. And, "Okay, thank you very much. We'll get back to you." And I went home, and my leg was about 5 inches long and 3 inches wide, black and blue. It was just horrible. But I did get the gig. So that's really how I started in music.
That is a great story. I love it. Wow. So tell me about your song, Killing Time.
Killing Time is a great song written by Chris Anderson, another great friend of mine. He was a lead guitar player in the band called The Outlaws. He's been writing for a long time, and I've actually co-written some songs with him along the way. And he's since moved down to Florida. And I thought, well, you know, Let's see. Let's time to talk to Chris and see what he's got. So he sent me three songs, which are on the record, by the way. If he would have sent me more, it might have been the Chris Anderson show. But he sent me these songs, and I just loved them. And my manager was crazy for them, and we just tried to do as close to his rendition. His demos were just flawless. We went in there and just did the songs. And at one point, we were thinking about, you know, naming the record Against the Wind or one of his other songs. But Brand New Blues went out.
Wow. So that story is about killing time?
I think it's about, the song is about sort of a breakup. This guy is very, very, very sad. And he's just in a really, really bad place. And just, you know, he wants to get back to the girl. And but in the meantime, just killing time till time kills me.
Wow. That's what I love about lyrics, because so many fans and so many in the audience can relate to these songs and to these situations and the lyrics. A lot of times people say, you know, I don't have any friends, but I have music, you know, and music becomes their friend. I hear that expression so many times because it is hard to hang on to people. But these songs, they don't leave. Thank God, right? So we're going to play Killing Time now.
Set free, killing
before time killed me.
You know, before we go on, I just wanted to reflect on you making this album, working with Tommy Del Rossi, working in his new studio. What was one of the things that was surprising, you know, that you went in not expecting to have happen? Was there something that when the project is over, you're like, wow, you know, like that was something like that?
Both myself and my manager were so wonderfully surprised at Tommy's profession. Well, we were always surprised at his professionality, but just his grasp of everything that was going on. And when you're in a studio trying to, you know, engineer and co-produce and play the drums and do all this other stuff, you got to really have focus all the time. So we were just overly excited about Tommy's contribution to the everything of it. Of the record.
And he's very easygoing too. And I think when you work with people, especially in stressful situations where you feel like you're under the gun for time or things aren't working out or there's equipment issues or whatever, I mean, when you work in music, you realize if anything's going to go wrong, it goes wrong, right? So you always have to you have to stay flexible, right? But Tommy is so easygoing. It's like everything just rolls right off of him. So that probably added to your experience. So that's really exciting. Before we talk about the last song, which is one of your hits on this album, I wanted to talk about what the rest of the year looks like for you. What are the things do you have coming up? Do you have any social appearances or, you know, what is the promotional things for you for the rest of the year?
Right now, we're still getting the record organized and we haven't received the final copies of the record yet. So we're waiting to hear from the factory that they're actually printed, and we've got a pre-sale going on right now. And we did the first single that we just released. So there's that. And we're our own record company. All the ins and outs, all the minutiae that go along with everything else, we have to do ourselves. So that's a full plate right now.
Absolutely. Well, I will be promoting whatever I can do to help to promote this because I love it. Tell me about this last song, which we're going to roll out the interview with, called I'm Gonna Take the Money. Tell me about that.
That one, another couple of friends of mine, Daryl Burgess and Joanna Cotton, along with a lady named Angie Russell, wrote the song. Daryl played drums on one of my records, so I've been knowing him for quite a long time, and we've been friends. And so I called him up. I said, what do you got? And he said, sent me some songs, and I really liked this one. And of course, it was the demo was sung by Joanna Cotton, who's a fabulous voice. We said, well, it was a little country, but let's actually try to kind of steer it over to a more of a blues rock song. And I think that came through. It's a great song.
So exciting. Tell me about your social media. How can the fans reach out and find all you have going on?
I am on Facebook at I Am Sean Murphy. And I'm also in a private group. Please come and join the group. It's called Sean Murphy, Her Life in Music. And then, of course, I'm on X as a Sean Murphy Band, and I'm on YouTube as a Sean Murphy Band. I think that's it.
And Instagram.
Can't
forget that. Very good. Wow. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you on. I look forward to promoting you and listening to all of your music. It has been really an honor to speak with you, and it is really an incredible career that you've had. Thank you so much for doing the show, Sean.
You're welcome. And the record actually comes out May 25th.
Oh, perfect. All right. Perfect timing.
Join that pre-sale.
Exactly. Pre-sale. That's right. We're going to roll out with I'm Gonna Take the Money by Sean Murphy. Thank you again, Sean.
First time you marry for love, but there's no guarantees. Love don't pay for no groceries. They never tell you there's a debt to us part, and I can't even afford to fix this broken heart. Now if I had to choose between love and money, I'm gonna take the money. The money. Well, you don't have to be no perfect love if I can get a seat up in the country club. Yeah, I'm just a simple little country girl, but I don't turn up my nose at those diamonds and honey, just wanna know what it's like to be rolling in green on the other side. So what's in your wallet, baby? Is it platinum or black? 'Cause I might be inclined to call you back. Yeah, if I had a choice between love and money, I'm gonna take the money.
You have been listening to Bringing the Darkness to the Light with Catherine Nadal, professional psychic medium, Dream Central Station, LLC. My audio editor is Al Hemberger at the Loft Recording Studios in Bronxville, New York. This is WNEW 102.7 FM Radio.